much. Are we ready to recommence? Okay, between now and lunch, basically we have the agenda item on the disclosure initiative. We've already heard a little bit about it earlier on, and to me this is a really exciting project. In terms of what's happening, I've just said to Alan and Christy, and great progress being made, but I think I will leave it, won't say anything more, and leave it to Alan and Christy to talk us through where we're at and an opportunity for us to talk to them after they've presented to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanna. And it's nice to hear that it seems like it's good progress. We think it's a good news story because it's a cross-cutting issue about improving quality of financial reporting more generally. What we're going to do is the idea of the session is the disclosure initiatives, as you'll see, is a whole series of threads of little projects and things that that we're trying to do to improve the quality of disclosure. And because it's a series of threads, people often find it difficult to see how it all fits in together. So we're going to try and give you an overview of all the activities that we've got going on. We're going to report a little bit of progress against the 10-point plan that we announced last June. And then Christy in particular is going to give you an overview of the topics that we're planning to have in a discussion paper being published next year. A little bit of update, Hugh and mentioned the performance reporting project being added to the agenda. I just want to talk a little bit about that and relate it back to financial statement presentation, the project we suspended in 2010, and explain and try to manage expectations with this. Then we're also going to mention a little bit about IFRS filing and taxonomy. We're doing a jurisdictional profile project. But probably the most important thing is give you a bit of chance to ask questions. We are going to walk through the whole presentation together because we thought you have to see the whole thing as a package and then come back and actually ask questions about the bits and pieces. So if you'll bear with us, you're going to hear us talking for a little bit and then hopefully we'll have some questions about each of the threads. So just a little bit of a recap. This grew out of the agenda consultation. I think even without an agenda consultation, we'd been sensing a frustration that people were saying that the financial reports under IFRS were getting too long, too complicated. People were treating this as being too much of a compliance exercise and not a communication exercise. And the agenda consultation, I think, brought that together. And we decided to do two things at that stage. One was that we were going to have a look at a disclosure framework. At that point, we were looking at it as part of the conceptual framework discussions. And the second thing was we thought we needed to do something practical, and that is we set up a discussion forum because we realised very quickly that we're only one part of the IFRS supply chain in that there's the standard setters, the preparers, the auditors, the regulators, and so on. So we wanted to bring all those people together to try and understand who should not take responsibility, but what steps each of us could take to try and improve reporting generally. And we undertook that in January last year, produced a feedback statement, which essentially was our action plan about what we expected to do. And in that document, which I think it's all sitting, I think, in the on the website, I think a part of SharePoint for everybody here, you can access, and it's also on our website. People say, oh, the disclosure is a problem, it's too much complexity, or it's too long, it's lots of things. It's people, we think, not applying materiality appropriately. People are taking a checklist approach. I'm sure you've heard me say this before, but I was in one forum, and one of the auditors said that they have a checklist of checklists to make sure that they've complied with all the checklists. And so when you're doing this, compiling financial statements, people are seeing this as compliance rather than trying to tell a bit more of a story or communicate how well their organisation's done. We think some of the problems, there's a lack of clarity in some of our standards. We're going to mention one very quickly to do with accounting policies, but if people reading our standards aren't quite sure what we mean, we think they often throw everything at it because one way or the other they'll meet our requirements, so they over-disclose to do that. So there are lots of different things that are going on and that actually affect disclosure. Some we think are more behavioural, but often some of the catalyst for that change in behaviour can be standard setting. And what we did is we identified what we thought some improvements could take place, particularly in some of our standards, and from that we developed a 10-point plan that was announced in June of last year. So 10 very simple things. 8 were kind of short-term measures, and then 2 slightly longer-term, and Christy will sort of lead you through those.
Thanks, Alan. So I'll take you through the 10-point plan, and as Alan mentioned, this was a list of items which Hans had actually mentioned at our IFRS conference in 2013. And what they really do is put in a checklist, which is a dreadful word, but a list of what we're trying to do as part of the different projects in our disclosure initiative. And so the first 5 points I'll go through are really going to relate to some of the work we've been doing on our proposed amendments to IS1. So if I look at the first step, which was we should clarify in IS1 that materiality principle does not only mean that material items should be included, but that also that immaterial information can overwhelm or detract from useful information. And what we did in our proposed amendments to IS1 was that we put in some language when we're dealing with materiality to say that you shouldn't disclose immaterial information if it obscures useful information. We were thinking about trying to put some language to prohibit the disclosure of immaterial information, but felt that that wasn't operational. And some of the feedback we've had supported that stance, that trying to prohibit immaterial information wouldn't be a good step, but trying to prohibit or prevent immaterial information that obscures useful information was a positive way forward. If I move to point number 2, then we should clarify that a materiality assessment applies to the whole of the financial statements, including the notes. So again, in these proposed amendments to IS1, we put in some language to say that if you're assessing materiality, you assess whether that an item is material as a line item on the primary financial statements, it may or may not mean that it is also, there might be information that's also information that's material in the notes. So just because an item is material on the face as a line item, it doesn't necessarily mean that all related information is material for the notes, and vice versa, if an item is not material for the primary financial statements, it still needs to be assessed to see whether it should be material and disclosed in the notes. I think that discussion also feeds well into the work that we're doing on materiality in our materiality project, where we're looking at materiality and how it applies within different contexts, and we'll talk about a bit more about that this afternoon. So if I move to point 3, so on that step we said that we should clarify that if a standard is relevant to the financial statements of an entity, it does not automatically follow that every disclosure requirement in that standard will provide material information. And again, in our IS1 amendments, we've tried to clarify that just because a standard specifies a disclosure requirement, it means that you do need to assess whether the information required by that specific requirement results in material information. And actually, I think this is a key amendment that we're proposing in our outreach to IS1. We have heard of people saying that if they did not comply with a specified requirement in a standard on the basis of materiality, that was had some notion of non-compliance about it, whereas I think what we would say is because it's not material, that is in and not disclosed, that is actually in compliance with IFRS. So if I move to step four, we will remove language from IS1 that has been interpreted as prescribing the order of the notes to the financial statements. And so in the IS1 amendments, we propose to take out some language which was seen as prescribing or at least implying that there was a default order that an entity should order the notes to their financial statements. It means that what we did was we tried to give the option to entities to, when determining a systematic order for their notes, to either look at the importance or the relevance, or you could actually keep the order as was already in IS1. So if I move to step number five, and I think this will be the last of our IS1 amendments actions, but it said we should make sure IS1 gives companies flexibility about where they disclose accounting policies in the financial statements. And again, in our IS1 amendments, and this was caught up in the same amendments which dealt with ordering the notes, we tried to clarify that an entity could disclose its accounting policies where it felt it would provide relevant information. So if an entity felt it was better to disclose its accounting policies as part of a related note, we wanted to ensure that that possibility, which we see in practice today, is supported by the language in IFRS. We also know that that sort of freeing up this idea of having a summary means that you could, as this slide suggests, order your accounting policy based on prominence, so bringing up those more important policies to the beginning of the financial statements and maybe making an assessment to take some ones that you feel are less important and sending them to the back of the financial statements. So those were the amendments, I think, or the steps, which we think are covered pretty quickly by our proposed IS1 amendments, and we are trying to get an exposure draft out for final standard by the end of the year. I think we did have some initial feedback on the exposure draft, and Alan, you were going to go through that.
Yeah, the comment period's closed. We took a summary of the comments to the board in September, and there was strong support for the package. The only thing that really was controversial, was the order of the notes. And there's a bit of a mixed view amongst investors in particular about whether or not we should have common note order, or whether we should allow people to present perhaps the more important notes first and tell what they believe to be the more important story first. There's some perception that by having it in the order of importance, every year something's going to change, so you're going to get sort of jumbling up of the order. That was, as I said, the most contentious. We're taking that issue back this month in October, but only to suggest a refinement of the wording. But we intend to go to recommend that we actually finalise that as well. So, because I think overall, there was overwhelming support for this, and that it's one of those difficult ones where you go out with a package of proposals, everybody says they're fine, and you must feel obliged to take something back to the board, but we actually only have two issues to have a look at. There has been a bit of confusion, though, I think, generally about the purpose of the amendments. And in particular, and I often hear it from investors as well, they think that the purpose of all of this is to take things away from them, to take disclosures out of the financial statements. That's not its purpose. The purpose is to make sure that we improve the quality and make sure that we focus on the more important. We think a consequence will be that we'll end up with shorter reports, but the goal is not to go out and say we've got a 120-page report, we want to cut it down to 90 pages. That is often a consequence of thinking more carefully about the disclosures and following some of the principles that are reflected by the changes we're making. The other thing that's come out of this, both through the feedback we've got in the comment letters and in related correspondence and discussions we've had, there's evidence that the constituents are taking steps anyway, regardless of whether these proposals go ahead or not. Charles mentioned this morning the examples out of Australia. We mentioned in here the streamlining approach to financial reporting, which is an approach that PwC in Australia in particular are advocating. We think that had its roots in some work that was done in Europe initially. It's not a matter of finding out who started this first. I think there are some really interesting threads globally and really good example of financial reporting. And it's tremendous to see firms actually taking that and formalising it in a way, in terms of packaging and encouraging. Another couple of bits of good positive feedback, one which I guess I'm particularly pleased about, one of the firms actually asked permission to take the IFRS financial statements and to use those as a demonstration of how you actually could change and improve the quality of the reporting from our previous ones to the current ones. And so they're using that as part of a roadshow that they do. And in a way, it's kind of like the streamlining approach. We ended up with shorter financial statements because we actually started to think about prioritising our note structures and so on. So, as I said, we are seeing evidence that people are making changes. You could sit back and say, well, do we actually need to finalise them? Well, I think the answer is yes, because we had an email last week actually from one of the firms saying that they have a list of others who are ready to make the next step, but they need the changes in IS1 to act as a catalyst for that. So there seems to be a nervousness about going ahead and making these big changes in financial reporting without seeing the catalyst of the changes in our standards as well. So as Christy said, our schedule, I think, has got 16th of December or something. It's the 16th of December is our target date. If we can get this through the board this month and then get through our balloting process. But we want to have it out this side of Christmas so that we can have an effective date of in 2016.
So just moving on to point six, and this is actually another illustration of how the disclosure initiative isn't just focused on disclosure overload and trying to reduce disclosures, but in response to requests from many users, we are considering adding a net debt reconciliation requirement, or that was the step to look at requiring that. And that was to look at what was net debt and to provide some disclosures about how it moved, and then also to combine some disclosures which people felt were already in the financial statements but were scattered. And what we've done in response to that is that we've actually proposed some specific amendments to IS7, and these will require a reconciliation of debt, not net, but just the gross debt for liabilities and maybe assets, but predominantly liabilities that are related to an entity's financing activities. Now, in order to develop those proposals, we undertook a survey amongst users globally to ensure that this wasn't a geographic specific request, and we also undertook some outreach with preparers through our Global Preparers Forum to ensure that what we would be suggesting wouldn't be overly burdensome. So these proposed amendments to IS7, we're hoping to get an exposure draft this time out before the end of the year. This will combine with some of the longer term work that we're doing in the Principles of Disclosure Project, which I'll talk about soon, where we're going to look more on the cash and the cash equivalent side as part of that project. So if I move to point number seven, so the step we said we would do was we will look into the creation of either general application guidance or education material on materiality, and that we'd work with the IAASB, so the International Association, or the Auditing International Association Standards Board, and IOSCO to do that. So this really is highlighting one of our longer-term research projects that we're working on, which is the materiality project, where we're looking, and this will be the subject of a presentation this afternoon. But there we're wanting to understand whether we need additional guidance on materiality, and if we do need additional guidance, what form and what content of that guidance would we need. We have undertaken quite a bit of research already regarding materiality, and we reached out to both national standard setters, regulators, academics, to understand what we currently mean by materiality and how it's currently applied across different jurisdictions. We've also undertaken some outreach already with our ASAF with world standard setters, and had an education session with the IASB in September. And we, as I said, we'll be discussing with you this afternoon. We're hoping to pull that together and come back to the board with a recommendation for what our next step should be in November. Then if I move to step number eight, which is when developing new standards, we will also seek to use less prescriptive wording for disclosure requirements. And we think prescriptive language in IFRS can be a barrier to entities using judgment. This issue I was talking about earlier, that entities seeing a list of disclosure requirements and feeling like that they had to disclose that list irrespective of materiality. We think that our language does not help the application of that sort of judgment, so we'll be looking at looking to see how we could rework our disclosure requirements to make sure that application of materiality is expected and appropriate. We have made some good progress already on this. I think the IFRS 14 regulatory deferral accounts gave an example of another way that we might write our disclosure objectives. We're also looking, as part of the materiality project, a sense of how we might want to write our materiality our objectives more clearly, because we think it's against those objectives that you can make better materiality judgments. We're also, in the very early stages, but our view is that ultimately we would want to prepare a drafting or a best practice guide for the ISB on disclosures and get a better sense or a bit more structure around the way that we actually write disclosures internally. So I can move to point number 9, which is basically saying that this really deals with our principles of disclosure project, so that we would begin a research project to undertake a more fundamental review of IS1, IS7 and IS8, which sort of give you the structure and format of disclosure and presentation requirements in IFRS. We would also revisit some of the principles and the work that we had done earlier on the suspended financial statement presentation project. So in terms of this step, we have initiated our principles of disclosure project, and I'll talk a bit more about that later in this presentation, but we have started discussions with the board. And in terms of performance reporting, we did have a discussion with the board about where and what work should be done on performance reporting, and that's been part of a separate research project, which I think Alan will give a bit of an update on later in this presentation. So if I move to slide number 10, which is the last step. So once the review of IS 1, 7 and 8 has been completed, we will undertake a general review of disclosure requirements in existing standards. So we already have started a bit of work on this. We're trying to compile an inventory of our current landscape of IFRS and get a sense of the way disclosure is currently structured, and identifying the main problem areas, in particular similes. So we understand for material we can use a lot of terminology, which I think means there's sort of similar things, important, substantially, material, significant. And if we can identify those, I think in conjunction with the work that we're doing on principles of disclosure, we can look to see what we meant and maybe react and respond and perhaps amend them as necessary. I think the work here will also have to feed into the work that we currently do in our post-implementation reviews. So if we see, as part of those post-implementation reviews, I think one of the outcomes of this project would be that we hope, as part of those reviews, there'd be greater sort of focus on the disclosures that are being made and whether they are being effective and doing the work that they were intended to do. So that was the end of the 10-point plan. So I think we see that we have made... Yeah, and Alan wants to say something.
Yeah, just add in there. I think this is a good example where we've actually working quite well with other standard setters. We have the UK FRC are doing some work for us on cash flows, for example, that's feeding into our project. The Italian standard setter is doing some work on accounting policies versus accounting estimates. And the New Zealand standard setter is doing some work on point 10, which is to do with some of the disclosures. And we think within the project team, it's not going to be easy for us to do a quick sweep through and just tidy up the disclosure requirements across the board. You have to think more carefully, because you have to have a look at the recognition and measurement criteria within a standard and how that relates to disclosure. So we think we have to look at it standard by standard, and that means prioritising standards and identifying the ones that are the biggest problems. As Christy said, the post-implementation review might feed back some information saying the disclosures aren't meeting their needs, but we'll also have a look at some of the ones that we know from anecdotal evidence are the ones that people are most concerned about. And the New Zealand Standards Centre is going to have a look and see if they can help work and develop a template for to help us to do that sort of process. So we're trying to draw as much as we can on the global community for that.
So if I move to the disclosure initiative more generally, and this is really, well, the 10-point plan was effectively another way at looking at the disclosure initiative. So if I pull together some of the threads that we hinted at as part of that 10-point plan and give you a bit more detail in particular about the work we're doing on the principles of disclosure and materiality. So if I move to slide 20. Here, we tried to give an overview of the research projects that we're undertaking as part of the disclosure initiative. And on the left is really what I see as the disclosure initiative itself, and we've shifted performance reporting to as a separate project separately on the right-hand side. We've put materiality underneath, sort of at the top, because it is trying to show that materiality is a pervasive concept and should be applied across standards and across IFRS. The box that we have under that tries to describe the principles of disclosure project, which is looking at fundamentally how we structure and format and have some overriding principles about the way that we present, disclose both our financial statements and any supporting explanatory notes. And the end result of this work will be a discussion paper which we're projecting to be published in the second half of 2015. We want that to replace the presentation and disclosure requirements in IS 1 and 7 and 8, which I think we think can be improved and be more coherent and be a bit more consistent, especially in terms of language. In addition, we, as I mentioned, we would want to prepare something that we could use internally for disclosures. I think disclosures are sometimes seen as the part of the standard which is developed towards the end of the standard setting process, and I think the disclosure formats and thinking are often developed very much or derived from a previous standard. And I think we could maybe take a step back and think more holistically and perhaps more strategically about the way that we write disclosures internally. I think the other thing, as I mentioned, we're wanting to do a comprehensive review of existing standards, and I think that work really needs to be hand-in-hand with the principles of disclosure, because the principles of disclosure and that framework that we have for disclosures really should give us the basis on which to assess what our existing standards are showing us. So although we'd started some work here looking at the landscape and trying to pinpoint some things in standards, I think we can only really move forward and really make amendments once we have a sense of what our actual basic principles are, and that's in the Principles of Disclosure Project. And the final item here is the filing and access requirements, and Alan will give you a bit more information about those. But I think, Alan, you had some observations on that slide.
One thing too is just keeping on the slide, the IFRS replace ISAs 1, 7 and 8. The way I think of this is that essentially this is a drafting guide for preparers. So imagine if you're sitting down trying to put together a set of financial statements or a financial report, and we gave you a little guide on what information or what shape the basic statements should be, like a statement of comprehensive income, statement of financial position, a cash flow statement. You know, what are the basic summary statements that we expect to see? How would we actually structure them? Is there a way that's better that allows for cross-entity comparisons? How much detail should be in there? Then you have a look at the notes. What sort of guidance can we give you that helps you understand or identify the best way to present the notes in terms of perhaps the structure? How much detail you want to have in there? Essentially, it's a drafting guide. It's a set of instructions in a way, principle-based, of course, on how to put together a set of financial statements. At the moment, we've got those instructions are spread across three different standards. We want to try and bring them all together into one standard. The other thing, too, is, and Christy mentioned, which is why it's important, the comprehensive review. Maybe sometimes when we look at some of our very specific standards, we might look at whether it's share-based payments or the post-employment benefits. You look at the disclosure requirements in there, and they seem to be so prescriptive or so detailed that it almost they almost feel as if they override the general principles of designing a set of financial statements. So we're going to have a look at that and make sure that they don't get in the way of good reporting because they feel as if they're far too prescriptive or too bulky in a sense and not so much about communication. So I guess that's what I see the whole package. And the couple of observations we have is I think ideally, and if we went back, this is almost like a financial statement presentation project on steroids in that it's quite all-encompassing. And ideally, I think that a lot of people would perceive, and my personal view is that performance reporting would be better developed as part of this package as well. Because all the performance reporting is when you look at the statement of comprehensive income, it's trying to structure it in a particular way that conveys aspects of performance. But we don't want to do that at this stage. We think that doing so would delay us bringing in significant improvements to disclosure. It was probably the one thing that slowed down the FSP project was performance reporting more than anything else. And we think we can make very important improvements and reduce some complexity by going ahead and treating the performance reporting as a separate thread. The other thing is that, and I think it's where people have struggled a bit with the whole initiative, is we've got these little changes to IS1 and then we've chucked in another one to in terms of the financing activities, and it feels like it's a little bit bitsy and little pieces here and there. Our preference would not be to do any of that, but to simply go ahead and develop a cohesive discussion paper and then on with a series or a package of improvements after that. But as we identify things that we think will actually take away impediments to good reporting, we're adamant that we should get those out sooner rather than later. I think as we get closer to getting the principles of disclosure discussion paper out, there'll be less of a need for that. So my view is, I think, once we finalise the amendments that we're to IS1, plus this cash flow one with the financing, I suspect that's all we've got on our radar at the moment. We don't expect to push anything else out as short-term improvements. And partly, as we mentioned before, we're starting to see behavioural changes already. So people are starting to make improvements and think about it without us having to make standard setting activity. So, moving on. Now, Christy's going to talk to you a little bit about what's going to go into the discussion paper.
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, we're targeting a publication date of the second half of, or the first half of 2015, so Q2. What we are proposing will be in that discussion paper will be discussion about some general application or a general application of the quality characteristics, and that's really a set of communication principles, and we're actually taking a paper to the board this month about those communication principles. It was interesting, Alan and I were having a discussion about whether they're actually even needed because they do sound somewhat simple, but the response we've had as part of the conceptual framework was actually communication principles were supported, and as part of the survey work we'd done for the discussion forum, that communication is one of the, or lack or poor communication is one of the key aspects of the disclosure problem. So we think trying to formalise some communication principles in IFRS could be beneficial. We would also want to propose some higher level principles on aggregation and disaggregation, grouping of information, the purpose of the primary financial statements, and by that I would mean a collective term of the primary financial statements. And this and the top item on the next slide, the purpose of the notes, again is the subject of a paper that we're taking to the board this month. And I think once, if we talk about those points on slide 22 and the purpose of the notes, that really gives you, I think, the high-level principles that you would need to structure your financial statements. And then, and it's those that we want to then maybe explore a bit more in the discussion paper on how we might apply them to specific aspects of the notes, so ordering, grouping, consistency and comparability, placement and cross-referencing and formatting. We've also got some specific topics that we want to raise. These have come through some of the other work that we've been doing, so on accounting policies and estimates. We think that's an area where many people have told us about poor disclosure. We've done some work already with the board on accounting policies and felt that actually it was quite a complex issue, and therefore the issues surrounding it would be better placed in the Principles of Disclosure Project. We're also looking at cash flows more broadly. I think Alan mentioned that the UK FRC is helping us develop our thinking in that area. And we're also looking at non-IFRS information, so compared to IFRS information, and trying to understand what is the difference, and if the, once determining that difference, whether disclosure of NINA IFRS information would be permitted or not in financial statements and in what context. And finally, here we've got electronic reporting, and I think we need to understand there or have some discussion in the discussion paper about how financial statements are not just a paper-based communication. They're also communicated through digital or electronic means. And what does that mean in terms of thinking about disclosures? Do you think differently or not? And I think, finally, what we would want to result from the discussion paper and an eventual ED is a replacement of IS1, IS7 and IS8, and it will bring together the general features of a set of financial statements, profit and loss, changes in equity notes, cash flows and accounting policies and estimates. I think in some ways that combined standard, which brings together these presentation and disclosure principles, which are at the moment scattered into one, does give you a framework-like, but we had originally called it a disclosure framework, but we didn't want to confuse people thinking that it was like a conceptual framework. It's not. It's a standards level framework for applying presentation and disclosure principles that would be applicable across other IFRS and disclosure requirements in IFRS. So I think, Alan, I think it's over to you.
Yep, I'll take the final run home. There are two more topics I just want to mention. One is performance reporting by itself, and then the second is jurisdictional profiles. Performance reporting, as said in July, the board decided to add, and I'll call it a project, to its research program on performance reporting. I always get nervous talking about this because it's interesting, I think, if you go back and look at FSP, Financial Statement Presentation Project. A lot of people had asked us to restart FSP. When are we going to restart it? We suspended it in September 2010. Why can't we do some more work on it? And most of the call was from the investor community, the people, the readers of financial statements, as opposed to preparers. I think it was not completely a complete split, but there certainly was a much stronger pull from investors for us to have a look at this. Now, if you go back and look at the history of the project of FSP, it started off as being just OCI. It was interesting, people smile when they see this history because it's almost gone in full circle. 2001, we shifted to look at performance reporting, and that was the income statement. 2004, the FASB joined us. They don't have an equivalent of IS1, which is our general financial reporting standard. And so it looked at everything except OCI. That was off the table. And then in 2008, we put together preliminary views. We started work on a staff draft in 2010, and then that got pulled as a project in September 2010. What we did is we had a look, and we're going to start to develop a scope paper. In the background, we've actually mapped all of the FSP project elements. So we went back to the staff draft in 2010 and had a look at all the changes that were being suggested, or the carryover, and often from IS1. And we can actually map most of those either into the conceptual framework project, or they map right into the disclosure initiative, into work we've already been doing, and some of it into POD, the discussion paper. Just about the only thing left out of that was the notion of performance reporting. In other words, the notion of what is an operating profit, for example, to use quite a loose term, the best way to convey how well an entity's performed. So what we're trying to do is to have a look and see if we can develop a scope for this project and a timing when we would go ahead and develop it. We've signalled that this is on our medium-term project list because at the moment we've got others that we've given priority to, and there's no sense that this one is going to jump up and take priority over others. In particular, as we mentioned earlier, we don't want this to distract from the work we're doing in the Disclosure Initiative generally. And I think from a personal perspective as well, this is a difficult one. It's one of the more challenging issues, In many ways, it's the one most worth doing because we have struggled with performance reporting for a decade or more. And we're not going to solve everything in the framework. We're going to have some aspects in terms of dealing with OCI, but I think it's still going to come down to a standards level to help us with the performance reporting. So at the moment, it's early stages on this. I describe the research project often as the place where we do some of our thinking, so we're starting to think about this issue. That doesn't mean that we're going to race out and get a standard out next week. Actually, next week for us is about 3 years because it takes a while to get through the due process. So, as I said, it's on our radar, it's on our program of things to do, but please don't expect anything in the next 2 or 3 months in terms of a full scope paper or work on it. We're trying to gather in more background material. Now, the other thing which I'm particularly interested in is the filing and access requirements. And you know, Paul Pacht has done some excellent work on jurisdictional profiles for IFRS. So I can tell you pretty much which countries in the world adopt IFRS and just point to us, which ones have brought them into their own legislative frameworks and so on. But having produced perhaps an annual report or a financial report that complies with IFRS, what do people do with them? Do they stick them in a drawer? Do they file them? Do they with somebody central? Do they do it by paper? Is it done electronically? You know, the whole idea was supposed to be that you could have an investor sitting in London or New York, wants to invest in a telco around the world so they could access the information. But if somebody in New Zealand prepares a set of financial statements and then files a hard copy or physical copy somewhere, and how's the person in London going to get hold of it? So what we're trying to do is, this is a bit about the taxonomy, IFRS taxonomy, but it's as much about what happens after a set of financial statements is produced, who can have access to it and how. And so I was going to ask Joanna. I was going to have a pregnant pause for a while. Can you tell me? No, you don't have to tell me what the New Zealand requirements are, but I know I've been away from New Zealand for about over 9 years now, and I think I could tell you, but I wasn't quite sure. You know, but essentially in New Zealand, you have to file, if you're a listed entity, you have to file with the stock exchange on the same day or the same time you distribute it to your shareholders a copy of the annual report, and it has to be within 3 months of the end of the year. They also have another filing with their company's office, and that's within 4 months. And in terms of the form, the stock exchange says they would prefer to use an electronic format specified by the stock exchange. Generally, that's a PDF. That's what they say. Does that sound right, Joanna?
Vaguely right, but I would say it's probably all over the show. I think what you've actually raised here is that even in one little microcosm of New Zealand, that is varied and there is no one way of doing it. So I think it's a very valid question to ask as to who can access the information and in what form, because I think it is all over the show.
And interestingly, I think South Africa, Garth, it's within six months, but if you don't, if you don't have it done within 3 months, you have to file a preliminary report, which has the same sort of form as an interim report.
That is correct. The summarised one is used if it's not issued within 3 months, and it can also be issued in advance of the financial statement, so it might also be used as a press release.
So I didn't warn him, I was going to ask him, but you see that different places around the world have different filing periods and then different forms. PDF, when people say electronic, the most common is PDF. If you go to somewhere like Indonesia, it's a PDF is required except for banks, and they actually do some tagging in XBRL. So what we're doing is gathering information globally about what the filing requirements are, because access is very important. The second thing is we're asking what form they get filed in, and as I said, if it's electronic, we're asking whether or not they use a structured data format such as XBRL, and if they use XBRL, do they use our taxonomy to structure it? And even if they don't, we're trying to get feedback on other initiatives around a jurisdiction that might use XBRL as structured data. And the reason for doing that is that we know that if you've got tax departments and statistics departments and others using structured data like XBRL, extending it to financial reporting is a lot easier than introducing from scratch. So we're trying to get a sense of the layout internationally about who's using structured data more generally. So at the moment we've got about 15 of the profiles are in draft form. It's a tricky thing. It's just like we did with the full profiles in IFRS. You've got to go back to the Stock Exchange in New Zealand and saying, are we describing what you do appropriately? So because our first source of information is generally the standard setter, we figure that most standard setters should know what their filing requirements are in their jurisdiction, and we're getting that as our starting point. But they don't necessarily know what's happening with XBRL space around in other areas. So that's a difficult one. We have to be a bit hedge our statements in there. We're running this out of the ACO Oceania office. Grace Yong-Lung is taking the lead on this. But as I said, we hope to get our first batch of profiles out by the end of this year. And that it's hard to get the information sometimes, and that might spur people along to do it. The other one to mention is, Hugh mentioned it very briefly in terms of the taxonomy development. We're developing our taxonomy now concurrently with the IFRS changes, so a new standard like revenue comes out, we provide an update to the taxonomy at the time. And that means that this is why it goes hand in hand, we think, with the filing requirements. Let's say that we all accepted that structured data filing was actually very helpful. There's no point saying we've adopted the new IFRSs and we've adopted early, but the filing, the taxonomy or the way to actually tag it, that's not going to be released for another 9 months or a year. So we're trying to keep up to date at the time so that anybody who does produce IFRS and adopts early, they can follow on with the tag data. And as Hugh said as well, we're getting to the point where we expect to have the ISB take some ownership over the taxonomy. And as we've discussed here, it's as much about making sure that the taxonomy captures in an appropriate manner and reflects IFRS, because we think we should own that process rather than allowing others, for example, to create a taxonomy that could change the way information is captured in an electronic form from the way it's been conveyed in a set of financial statements. So a lot of that is about being educational, as providing some support material as well. So that was the 900 mile an hour overview of the disclosure initiative, but we're open now for Q&A till lunch.
And Alan has, I think, very usefully summarised questions on slide 31. What I would like to say first of all, actually, is Grace, who has just joined the Asia Oceania office, I am extremely concerned about what you in London are throwing their way, and I can speak as an Asia Oceania person. The taxonomy profile stuff, which is pretty damn hard, and somewhere else in your research thing, you said that they're looking at research for a new tax standard? You really are a bit mean. Anyway, that aside... Okay. That aside, and I think the questions here, and I'd actually jotted down some because I'd forgotten that Alan had them at the back there, was in fact as to, you know, thinking about our advice, are we supportive of the direction, and in particular, any observations that we have around the world in terms of, as Alan says, he's got examples of people applying some of this already and streamlining, and Charles gave example, of one of his companies in Australia, and I certainly know that in New Zealand a number of mine have made some significant progress already in this area. So I think comments here, and I see two of you have your cards up, and I was busy talking. Oh, four, so I don't know what order, so I'm going to start with Lota.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. I'm not surprised that you got very positive feedback for this initiative, also for what you've already done for the 10 points, also from the user community. Stricter rules for net debt reconciliation, please, yes, very good. And also first 5 points on materiality, maybe I'd just like to mention something on that. The whole point that it is approached from the aspect of non-material information not cluttering the report is very important, because my feeling is that the users do not have the main problem in terms of materiality with non-reported material facts, because if a management does not report a material fact, even ad hoc and timely, you know, you could pretty quickly be in criminal territory. So, you know, this can be a problem, but it's not, you know, a continuous problem. Whereas the over-reporting of non-material issues, that is a problem, starting with the simple finding of the material things in the annual reports, but also going a little bit further, because from an analyst or investor point of view, you still notice that companies are using this tool to kind of camouflage negative material information, either by, you know, touting something unimportant at the same time to hide the impact of the negative news, or by simply trying to cover it with a lot of unimportant stuff once it is reported in the financial statements. So if that can be, let's say, checked a little bit, that would be helpful. You probably need some clearer definition of what materiality is, but we come into that, I guess, in the next session anyway. So that's very important, and it does focus, and it should focus on the notes, because the primary statements don't have that much information. That's just the surface. I mean, the investor or the analyst needs the notes. That's where the detailed information is. That's where you create your performance or any indicators that you use to identify to value the company. So that's where you have to be able to find things. In terms of just one thing, the order of the notes, I would have also thought that maybe the important ones should always be in front, but analysts tend to, that was my feedback I got, support what you said, leave it in the structure as it is so I can find what I look for every year again at the same place.
Okay. Thank you, Lota. And obviously a lot of what you said does come down to materiality, which I think the discussion we're going to have this afternoon will be very interesting. Isabel?
Thank you. Two things. First on changes, I am aware that some French companies have also undergone initiatives. I'm not quite sure how these have been yet received by the users, and obviously the difficulty is going to be in that. And I was very interested, in hearing that in Australia, you know, the notes were reduced by that much, because I think you'll find that in some of the initiatives, it doesn't necessarily reduce the notes by that much. So, and obviously the difficulty you're going to have is understanding what process each of these companies has gone through and what was their objective, because it might be different. So that's the first point. And the second point was, I was a bit surprised when I heard you talk on slide 24 about non-GAAP and whether these would be permitted or not permitted under IFRS. So I'm not quite sure exactly where you want to go there, because we all know that IS1 is not very prescriptive, and that preparers have felt the need for that, but more so that users have asked for some of that information there. So they feel that actually provides or helps provide a good understanding of how a company views its account, how it explains them. I was wondering also how you are tying this with ESMA's and IOSCO's initiatives, which, as far as I know, ESMA's finished its consultation on alternative performance measures, which also dealt with those that were in the financial statements, whereas IOSCO, I think that's excluded from financial statements. So, and then a last link with obviously your performance reporting project, because obviously alternative performance measure ultimately is to show what performance reporting is. So how is this all going to be tied in together?
Just on, I suppose it's the non-IFRS where the question was, but it's definitely early discussions, so we're just having some initial discussions with CMAQ on this week. And I think there it's exploring, one, what do we mean by non-IFRS? Because I think people mean different things, because some people mean it's not specified by IFRS, and I think that's where ESMA we're thinking, but there's a lot that's not specified by IFRS. And it may not necessarily mean that it shouldn't be in financial statements just because it's not specified. If there was a determination about what was non-IFRS or what wasn't IFRS or what was supplementary, what was might contradictory, then I think we have to have the discussion with the board as to whether they would, one, want to prohibit any sort of information from being placed in the financial statements or being part of the financial statements. If there wasn't the sort of prohibition, and if they could do that, it's a question, whether you'd want to sort of, would you permit certain information to be placed at least in IFRS financial statements, even though it might be non-IFRS? So at the moment, for example, we see some people putting parts of their management commentary, placing those in their financial statements, and they might box them like they do cross-referencing the other way. So is that something that the ISB should be even concerned about, should be addressing? And I think that's one of the questions we need to ask. So I think there's a lot that we don't know where this is going to end up, I think it's such an issue that we need to have at least had a discussion about what we think our role should be in that space and if there's any recommendations that we come out of it.
Okay, thanks, Kirsty. A further point I think that Isabel made at the beginning in terms of having seen observations in France of the streamlining and not sure of the process or the objectives, and I'm just wondering whether, I mean, normally you do a post-implementation review, but because some people are adopting things now, in some ways to actually do formally ask the questions, whether through the national standard setters or whatever, as to why people are what progress has been done, why they're doing it, and what then the users stroke investors are getting out of it, because I think that might help your project overall. So I thought that was actually quite an interesting observation. Vincent.
Thanks, Joanna. I guess for the discussion paper that's going to cover IS 1, 7 and 8, and the performance reporting project, so those two projects, I'm just trying to reconcile what may be carried over from the financial statement presentation project that you've mentioned. So my reconciliation is in terms of the language that was previously used for the financial statement presentation. So we had disaggregation across the flow statements, then we had cohesiveness, and then there was potentially a more comprehensive cash flow statement. So I really have two questions. So on slide 22, one of the, I think it's 22 and 23, one of the elements you mentioned is grouping. And I was just trying to understand whether the cohesiveness principle is consistent with the notion of grouping. Then the other question I had was around the cash flow statement. So you've mentioned FRC is going to be doing some work in that regard. But I just wanted to get a sense as to whether this could be as far-reaching as was intended in the financial statement presentation project.
Two questions in there. The word cohesiveness rings alarm bells for some people, and it brings delight to others. But the cohesiveness idea of having grouping related things across as consistently we can across the financial report is something that will be embedded in the discussion. And certainly the disaggregation and aggregation principles. At what level do you need to aggregate down or disaggregate when you put them in the notes? So those ideas are there. But whether we use the term cohesiveness or not is another issue. But those are two of the threads of the financial statement presentation project that are mapped into the disclosure initiative. The second question about the cash flows, I think it's slightly early days. I can't tell you whether we're going to recommend a direct cash flow method or not, but we're doing quite a fundamental think through the FRC about cash flow statements and its role. Some people don't think it's a primary financial statement. They see that as being mainly supporting, and that really it's only comprehensive income and the statement of financial position. Others see it as being essential to understanding. So we're trying to make sure that we understand its purpose and its context and how it fits into financial report more generally. So in that sense, it might be far-reaching, I guess, in the discussion paper phase. But, you know, we've got a fairly open mind for the whole thing. So I don't know if that helps, but those are those are three threads out of FSP, the financial statement presentation, that are being picked up at Disclosure Initiative.
Okay, thanks, Vincent and Alan Shitsong.
Thank you. In a council meeting, we discussed several times about the integrated reporting. It's obvious that integrated reporting has something to do with the Disclosure Initiative. So my question is that what is the relationship between the Disclosure Initiative and the integrated reporting? To what extent the Disclosure Initiative will consider the proposal by the IIRC? For example, business model is considered very important in integrated reporting, but it's not currently disclosed in a financial report. So is the ISB going to consider adding more requirements for the business model in a financial report? Thank you.
Okay. 2 points. The first is that the Disclosure Initiative, we actually have for one of our papers in October a sort of a diagram that shows you get the primary or the main financial statements and then the notes, then you move to management commentary. The integrated reporting is more closely aligned with management commentary. That's outside the scope of this project. So we're concerned with the financial statements and the supporting notes. Second thing is we have that on the topic this afternoon. We're going to talk about the corporate reporting dialogue and integrated reporting and the enhanced disclosure framework. So we'll have another chance to have a look.
Very good point. And as I think we're seeing with a number of these questions that we raise, they are all interlinked with the future of corporate reporting, et cetera, et cetera. Egbert.
Thank you, Joanna. I had a few observations on this. First of all, positive and encouraged by the steps taken in the Disclosure Initiative. This is the right direction to go. The observation on the short-term initiative is actually a question on whether that is the end of it. There are a couple of elements that were not in scope of the short-term project, and I'm thinking of going concern disclosures in close call situations and short and long-term classification matters. A question whether those will be addressed or will come back later on in the project. So that's first. The second one, good to hear about the principles of disclosure, and it seems that that is going to be a very important building block in sort of bringing it together in creating the overall disclosure framework, because I think that was the starting point from the agenda consultation. The observation here is that, and it might be a point of detail on your slide 23, where you list what the ED or discussion paper will address, and it touches on qualitative characteristics that will be discussed in the discussion paper and how those apply. And I sort of miss relevance here as a qualitative characteristic to be explored as part of the DP. So it does talk about some of the others, but relevance seems to me particularly important in the area of principles of disclosure. Lastly, examples in practice. Yes, I have seen examples in practice where this already applies. I've been very closely involved personally in a reduction of more than 30% in annual reports. And that one was particularly driven by a report by the UK Financial Reporting Council that came out a couple of years ago.
Excellent.
Just very briefly, is that the end of it? We'd like to think that we roll everything into principles of disclosure, but we don't stop there in a sense, and that there is an exposure draft being put together. It's already been through in front of the board as an issue about short-term, long-term classification. So where there is a known problem, we'll step in to try and do that. And relevance is materiality. It's the key to that. And so we haven't forgotten about relevance, but it's in the materiality thread.
I think that we hadn't intended the Principles of Disclosure project to go into a lot of detail about materiality, because that was in the materiality project specifically, but I think if it comes out of the materiality project that the board does want to make amendments to either the definition or the way it's described in IS1, then I think that discussion might feed into the principles of disclosure project, just as a way to get that discussion in a due process document.
Okay. It's 12:05. We're due to stop for lunch at 12, so I'm going to suggest we actually stop at 12:15. That doesn't mean, and sorry, Ernesto, it doesn't mean don't ask your questions. However, if we can try to keep them short and sharp and if possible, in terms of the questions that Alan has asked around the behavioural changes, etc. Having said that and put everybody off, Jake.
I will try and be brief. Thank you, Joanna. I guess I have one question and one observation. The first question was, in previous IFRS Advisory Council meetings, I think we've made the point that problem definition in the research phase is very, very important. So I had a question here for the ISB, which is, are we clear we know what's broken with performance reporting and therefore what fixes are needed? That's the question. I'll give you a chance to think about that while I give you my observation. Observation around behavioural change. I think at in the larger end of the market, where there is a lot of resource, we are seeing people making positive steps towards improving the way they communicate with users. But I'm not so sure that that's repeated at the smaller end of the market, and I wonder to what extent that is coupled with the fact that those at the smaller end of the market do see financial reporting as a compliance exercise. So anything that can be done to help persuade those that there is value in improving the way they communicate with users would be very useful. Thank you.
Okay, so specific response to your question, do we understand the problem well enough? The answer is no, which is why it's in the research program. And I don't think you could ask our board members to explain exactly what the problem is and get everybody to agree on that. And I don't think outside we get the same either. So that's why it's there. We have to think about it, develop a scope paper, and then start to make sure we understand the problem before we race out with a solution.
The right answer. Zinger.
Thanks. I think this is definitely a step in the right direction in response to everything that's happening, the demand for better quality information. And I think, financial statements are, even with the whole integrated reporting initiative, financial statements are a fundamental component of that. So to the extent that we can try to improve the quality of financial information, that further advances the whole quest to provide users with better information. One question that I had was just in terms of, I was also very curious with respect to the reference to non-IFRS information or non-GAAP information. You know, how do we plan to scope that in to this exercise? Because I think it's something that we need to be very careful about. Yes, we can't ignore it, but then, as we're seeing with integrated reporting, we're trying as much as possible not to have it regulated and become a compliance exercise. So I think there needs to be a lot of care in how we scope in this type of information. The other thing is just with respect to, level of engagement with regulators, because one of the things that we've observed is that, various auditors are requiring certain companies include more versus less, primarily because, with the whole litigation liability aspects, it sort of reduces the prospect of getting into trouble with the regulators. So to the extent that regulators are more comfortable with companies disclosing better quality information, not just putting in the kitchen sink, then that will also help the initiative. So I'm not sure what sort of information and engagement is happening with respect to regulators and in turn how that influences the audit firms who want to make sure that they are providing, are not overly encouraging companies to put more versus less.
I think I'm going to answer it for you, or at least to say useful piece of advice, if you like, whether you're doing it or not, that we should be liaising with the regulators to ensure that there is consistent approach there.
I suppose she can't.
No, I'm just that you know, we have been liaising with them, particularly on materiality, and I think that's one of the discussions we'll have this afternoon. How do we, it's not just us who has to change or do something, how do we bring others with us, and any further insights of what we could do would be useful.
Danita?
Yeah, thanks, Joanna. And I will be very quick, too, because knowing what stands between us and lunch. First of all, thanks to the staff for putting together this paper. I found it to be extremely useful, and when I was talking about it with others within my organization, I think we all did. Just a quick question. At the bottom of page 22, top of page 23, talk about the discussion paper addressing the purpose of the primary financial statements and the purpose of the notes. That struck me as being content that might have been, that I might have expected to see at a conceptual framework level rather than in a disclosure project. And it kind of is back to the point Peter raised earlier this morning about who the primary users are. To me, all of that is really interrelated, trying to figure out what the purpose of the primary statements are and who the primary users are.
Thanks, Danita.
Okay. Very quickly, they have discussed at the conceptual framework level that one of the difficulties you have is that, and why we think it's more of a standards level issue, is that the point I raised a little bit earlier is a statement of cash flows primary for everybody, for example? Is it necessary? And when you start to sort of differentiate between these core statements and the supporting notes, you have to have a sense of what the core statements are. And there's an argument that for a bank, for example, financial institution, cash flows are less relevant. They are more supportive than a primary statement. So we think it's something we need to look at the standards level. It's very difficult at the conceptual framework level to lock down and say which statements are primary or principal ones. And an example today, for example, we have the statement of movements in equity is referred to in our conceptual framework, implying that it's a core statement. And we're not convinced that everybody agrees with that. So we think it is more of a standards level. So this is not to diminish its importance, but we think we need to look at different types of organisations.
Charles.
Just coming back to the use of non-GAAP information, ultimately in countries that are adopting IFRS, it'll be a matter for the regulator. And so, for example, in Australia, it is permitted, providing that information doesn't have prominence over IFRS, providing it can be reconciled back to IFRS, and providing that whatever adjustments are made are made on a consistent basis. But so that's the observation. My question is, ultimately, the use of non-GAAP information is driven by the analyst community, the so-called users of financial statements. And I wonder whether, from a research point of view, there's been any attempt to map the format and what information is presented at those analyst briefings to get a deeper understanding of what is driving the use of non-GAAP information?
Not in detail. What we have done is try to identify what we think some of the common non-GAAP measures are, but we also don't want to limit our discussion, if you like, just on, say, alternative performance measures, which is what people often think about when they think of non-IFRS. And I think what we want to try and do is really articulate that it's broader than that, the discussion that we're looking at. So in response, no, we haven't done that detailed research. We have done some, we are working to offer a list of commonly used examples and use that to try and draw out some greater sort of a sense of what we should be doing, if anything. I think maybe going forward we should perhaps do some more analysis to get perhaps a more extensive sort of sense of what those different performance measures are.
Begonia?
Thank you. Well, I find that a very interesting paper, when you try to separate disclosure or the notes of the other primary statements, sometimes it is not so obvious. And thinking about what you write in page 23 or 24, I'm not sure, about formatting, well, I was a bit surprised to see that there is a, you are thinking about formatting the notes, while there are no, it's not so obvious that the other primary statements are, or the formatting of those statements is a relevant issue. So why focusing on formatting the notes while the other primary statements are not required to be presented in a particular format? So I really don't understand that. And then the other is a question of names or titles. I was surprised to see that you talk about principles here, principles of materiality, ordering, grouping. Well, in my understanding, principles is something more fundamental. So before IFRSs, when we talk about principles, we talk about going concerns, accruals, very relevant basic things. And now it seems that the interpretation of principles is different, because in my thinking, well, grouping, ordering is not so fundamental. So I don't know if I don't use properly the word principles or if this is something else.
Begonia, I think there seems to be a theme coming out here, if you like, how I would summarise this session, which is around the scope of the discussion paper and just being very careful. Obviously, a discussion paper is exactly that. It is a discussion paper, so you're not, you know, so the sort of things that you're raising and other people are raising will come out in that with a view to providing feedback. But I think we've got to be, I guess the feedback is, be very careful with the words you're using and the scope of that discussion paper to ensure that we're not sort of overlapping on other things. That seems to be the general thrust, I think, of the advice coming through from a lot of people here. Fumio, I think, was next.
Yeah, thank you. I would like to support this disclosure initiative project, but the small number of companies applies IFRS in Japan at this moment, so I don't have any comment about the question two, that is the example of the practice changing, or question three, the behavioral changes. But just one comment about the question one. As shown in slide 21, the plural different level projects are running, and this is a good approach to resolve the various issues in a timely manner. But on the other hand, we need to consider that it's possible that it's difficult to get understanding by the various stakeholders, and also be inconsistent. That is what we need to care about. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Ernesto.
Thanks. I'm touching on Charles' comment. I think that all the trend towards, shorter reports is really welcome. What happens is that it's also bringing a focus on non-GAAP measures. Why is that? Very easy. I mean, you have to keep it very tight, and then you focus on what you think can affect your valuation and is not reflected by IFRS. And there's one topic in particular that is quite hot in the services and construction sectors, that basically you have a lot of joint arrangements. It's the way the business works. What happens is that now with the new standard, I mean, you're basically reflecting less sales and less EBITDA. So companies will have a focus on speaking to analysts, and if analysts buy into that, then it's all outside the GAAP, and analysts won't pay attention really to the financial statements and go directly to the kind of report that the company is producing. So I think that in any post-implementation review, it's very important to look at deviations and non-GAAP reporting, and usually it happens because it's affecting valuation metrics. So.
Thank you for those comments. And I think that brings us to the conclusion of that session. I think certainly from my perspective, and obviously from the number of comments and observations, I think it's gone down very well. So thank you, Kirsty and Alan. And to me, the key aspects that have come back from, if you like, the advice from the council is that there is generally a lot of support for this initiative, which is great, and generally that there are actually a number of initiatives actually happening anyway around the world, and I certainly think the advice in terms of trying to understand why they're doing those, etc. the non-IFRS information and how that scopes in and et cetera is obviously a key theme that's come through. And then the final one, the actual, you know, as I talked about just now, the scope of the discussion paper. So that's what I got from the discussion, and hopefully you found that, if you like, advice useful for you in terms of taking the project forward. So thank you very much, and thank you, council members. And if we break for lunch now, I'm going to ask if we can still come back at 1 o'clock, please, because 3 quarters for now should be plenty of time to eat some lunch and natter. Okay, so we will be back at one. Thanks very much.